The Chris Perillo Show's coverage of the Desktop Linux Summit is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.
There are quite a few media players on the planet, and one of the media players that's pretty well known is Real Player, and it's really known for not being installed on a lot of Windows machines. But there are a couple of individuals who work for Real who are trying to change that from the ground up, from the inside out, I should say. And we've talked about Vikram in past shows. Vic and I met when he purchased a keyboard that I posted on Craigslist a few months ago and had lengthy conversations. And we were also both at Robert Scoble's birthday party. And we're also here at the Desktop Linux Summit. And Real has a booth, just like the Chris Perillo Show. I don't know why we have a booth. I just asked for a table, and they gave us a booth. So I guess we're kind of... Jake's our booth babe, and he didn't dress very appropriately today, but we won't go into that at this point.
Yeah, I think we are fine with him dressing the way he is.
And this is Vikram Dendi?
Yes.
And you're also a Seattleite?
Mm-hmm.
And we're both here in San Diego, and you were just remarking that it's raining outside.
Yes.
So we brought the weather with us here.
Right.
As it were. So now, I've tried to explain what you do, and I only think of it from one side, but you seem to be doing a few things at Real at this point.
Yeah, no, as it is with most technology companies that are reasonably small and are trying to do a lot of things, I have a lot of hats at Real Networks. I formerly belong to the consumer products group, but I have my hands in Helix, which is our open source effort, which is probably what most of today's conversation will be about. I also, so my title right now is product manager for consumer products. And I also manage the design and development of the Real Player for Macintosh and, you know, Real Player for Linux, obviously.
The non-sucky players.
Right. The alternative cool players.
So you don't have much of a hand in the Windows side of things.
Well, as a product manager, I help with the marketing efforts and strategy efforts for the Windows Player as well. But that's a new hat that I'm wearing only recently.
What I seem to hear when I talk to people who either work at Real or used to was that there are several layers. So when the code was actually developed for some of the first versions of Real Player that really sucked, I mean, just to be blunt, it wasn't necessarily at the coding level. It's when it got to the marketing level that things kind of got a little iffy.
Actually, there is a correction there. You know, the first versions of the Real Players were actually awesome.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Yeah, you know, Real Audio 1.0, Real Player 1.0, all those were great.
They came with Windows, in Internet Explorer.
Right. I mean, the thing was, in those days, these were the cutting-edge technologies. I mean, we pioneered streaming media, pretty much, right? And so over time, you know, as the economy changed, as the target user changed, you know, you had to make decisions over time to dumb down the interface or make certain decisions for the user yourself. And, you know, sometimes you made the right decisions, sometimes you didn't make the right decisions. And, you know, once you grow to being very popular, every time you make even the slightest misstep, you know, it can become a big issue.
Well, right? I remember having a conversation with Phil Terone over how Real has kind of lost a lot of mind share in the space just because of the issues that had come with some of the versions of Real Player. I wouldn't go as far as to say the latest version, 10.5, is what you're up to on the Windows platform.
Mm-hmm.
Jake speaks very highly of it, says it's probably one of the better media player suites that's out there for Windows at this point.
Right.
But I personally still can't get past my past experiences with Real. Not the audio format.
Mm-hmm.
I have no issue with the audio format at all.
Right.
It's how I had to get to the audio format.
Right. I mean, it's a lot about user experience. I think performance-wise, technology-wise, we are on par or better on many, many fronts. User experience-wise, I think that There were times in the recent past we had to take a good hard look at, you know, how can we improve this? How can we get better? How can we bring back some of the people who left and still keep the people that are new? And I think that 10.5 was an effort, like you said, you know, effort at going back to that, you know, let's be friendly, let's be, you know, let's try to find this balance of, you know, not confusing the users, at the same time, you know, offering the right amount of features, right? And so I think we did a good job with 10.5, and, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. Once you do, you know, you have 300 million users, you have to worry about, you know, making wholesale changes. So you make them more gradually. And with our focus changing more and more into consumer services and away from actually selling software as much, I think that it is going to be even more there will be greater demand for us to create even better user experiences as we move forward.
You've brought a colleague of yours who also works on the Helix project, and since I was just introduced to him, I was hoping you'd be able to introduce him
to
everybody.
Yeah, Rob Lanfear here, you know, a good friend and also a great colleague, wonderful to work with. He actually stood in for an impromptu keynote today because, you know, Rob Glazer could not make it because of some plane problems.
It was still buffering. Buffering, I think, on the runway.
Right.
haven't heard buffering jokes before.
Yeah, right. That's so new.
Well, we didn't say we were creative here on the Chris Perillo show.
With Rob, Rob is an old timer for Real Networks. He's, you know, been there from quite some time back, and he, I would say, is one of the forces behind making Helix and basically the open source effort from Real Networks happen.
Yes. Could you define Helix for me? I've heard it, you know, used open source Helix. Is it something that users see, or is it something more that admins see?
So Rob is probably the expert at being able to explain this. His business card reads Helix Troublemaker.
And so this is you, Rob. Yeah. You, not to be confused with the other Rob.
Yeah,
not,
this
not
is
to
Rob
be confused
Lanfear.
With Rob Glazer.
Okay.
Yes, I'm Rob Lanfear. Thanks for that wonderful introduction, Vikram. The Helix is our multimedia engine that powers the our encoders, our servers, and our players. It's our source code. We often use it as a label for our source code initiative as well, which is the source code licensing that we do under on helixcommunity.org, either under open source terms or under commercial terms. We have a dual licensing model, and so the key underlying substrate of technology that's used to power all of our products is available in source code form on helixcommunity.org, and that initiative plus the architecture, that's what we refer to as Helix.
Okay, so Helix, much like Linux, is incapable of being described with, like, a simple phrase.
Right. I mean, right, exactly.
Just I'm really trying to understand. I understand it's Real's baby, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Helix is.
Yes.
It's a community, or it's which a community focuses?
It's both. There's the Helix community, which is the community focused around Helix. To give you some history on Helix, back in 1998, we released a rewrite of all of our software and released that as Real System G2. That architecture, it was a whole new plugin architecture for file formats, rendering plugins, file systems, just a very complete. It was real breakthrough at the time, in terms of thinking about media delivery as a framework. That framework is what today is branded Helix. The difference being that in 2002 we took that same framework that had been through 4 years of maturation and stabilization and a lot of really good work had gone on in that 4 years, and we additionally made that into we licensed the source code via Helix Community.
Okay, I think that makes a lot of sense then. Has there been a lot of adoption by the community at large in terms of taking the code that you've done, and have they started to build projects around the code that you're offering to the community?
Yeah, there's basically right now there's two large communities that are focused around Helix right now. One of which is around our flagship project, which is the Helix Player Project, And we have a lot of Linux distributors working in the Helix community to make sure that the Helix player is in really good shape for inclusion in their distributions, as well as serves as a good foundation for RealPlayer for Linux, which is all based on the same code base. And we've been using Helix Player as as our primary foray into the open source community, as a means of sort of demonstrating the power of the platform.
The platform being Linux?
The platform being Helix.
Okay, so why not make a less sucky RealPlayer for Windows?
Well, for starters, we don't feel like the RealPlayer sucks.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. Let me try to state that a little differently. How about a slimmed down, quick, efficient player that all it does...
We're very proud of 10.5.
No doubt about it. Unfortunately, I have about 15 companies trying to cram their media player down my throat. I don't install QuickTime. I don't install any other media player or organizer that I don't need.
Right.
The only thing I need is something, if I go to a website, say CNN.com always stands out. They have real content.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way I can see that content is if I have the real codecs installed.
Right.
Sure.
So
knowing the geek that Chris is, I know what Chris wants. I mean, you know, Chris is basically looking at a slim player that, you know, he can just launch just the tiny one whenever he just needs to listen to a clip.
Like,
and he doesn't have to launch this huge suite every time he wants something. Now, the fact is, it's always, like, just like, you know, when Microsoft is building Windows, it's always a balance for them, right? You know, when you look at Word in Office, right, there's so many features in Word. Most of us don't even use, like, 10 of those features. But they're all there because, you know, they need to cater to a bunch of people, right? Likewise, you know, in a multimedia application, in a full-fledged multimedia application with Jukebox and everything, it's kind of like, if you make just a slimmed down player, then everybody will ask, hey, where's my Jukebox? You know, how do I burn my...
Well, pardon the approach, but if you take a look at, and I don't know if you've ever done this or had this experience, if I install Adobe Acrobat, like mm-hmm. the creator, and then the reader, if I install one over the other, it will ask me, hey, what do you want to be the default, you know, opening for
right.
your PDF files?
Right.
Which do you want to use?
Right.
So to give me a choice... For someone who does know the difference between a Jukebox and an all-out application and something that is slimmed down, much
mm-hmm.
like I see when I looked at the media player page, the real player page for Linux, I was like, wow, that's great. Where's the Windows page?
Right. So you're asking basically two things. You're saying, why don't I get something very slim for my slim needs, you know, needs
yeah.
when I don't need all the other stuff. So that's
yeah.
one thing. And the second thing is, why can't the current real player be slimmer, right? So I'll answer both of those questions. One, in terms of getting a slimmer player, you know, we always think about this. Like, we are always thinking about, you know, is it better to make a full integrated experience, or is it better to have lots of little things that kind of come together to give you an integrated experience, right? And as, you know, computer processing power increases, as memory is available in spades, you know, you see most software going towards this whole integrated approach where, you know, it's easy for me to hand off from one thing to another thing. But that doesn't mean that we don't think about whether, you know, we can make a mini player or a slim down player. And, you know, these kinds of conversations, just like you just asked us, these are questions that we ask us ourselves all the time. And so while obviously I can't say anything about it yet about what's going to happen in the Windows player world, you know, next time around, who knows, you know, there might be something similar to what you're asking, you know, and make yourself heard, like
oh, trust me, I have no problem with that.
Right, and one other thing I would add is with Acrobat, just as Acrobat Reader caters to a very large audience who doesn't care about all the stuff that Acrobat offers, even then, Acrobat Reader itself is fairly heavy. You know, it takes quite a while to load.
Actually, 6.0 did. 7.0 was a vast improvement. If you haven't taken it seriously on the Windows side of things, 6.0 should have been forgotten. It was horrible.
Sure.
It was the worst thing that they could have done, but they really turned it around with 7.0.
Yeah, but
look at
the memory usage and look at... I mean, it's huge improvement. I agree with you. But it's a huge... The reason why it looks so nice, so much better, is because the previous experience was so much worse, right?
So wait, so you're saying that we have to kind of go to hell in order to know what heaven's like? Is that...
That's what it feels to me like as a user, right? And now, the thing is, there is a freeware application called Foxit. Foxit PDF Reader. I don't think you've heard of
it. I've heard of that, yes.
Okay, good. So Foxit is very, very light. It's less than a meg. You know, it actually renders most PDF files. And I use that quite a lot in place of Adobe Reader. Can Adobe Reader create a Foxit-like, slimmed-down version of the reader? Maybe. I don't know. But, you know, there are a lot of other things you need to consider, right? There's like, Adobe Reader has to deal with signed documents. And Foxit can't deal with signed documents, for instance. So the moment you add a little module that deals with signed documents, you know, you have increased the size.
It becomes complex.
Yeah. So as a designer, you're constantly facing these questions.
You know, for me, it would be, I remember the glory days, RealPlayer 2.0. I can still remember what it looked like. I mean, it wasn't exactly the fanciest thing on the system, but I remember that I could count on it. It worked. It worked fast. You know, I had no problems with it at all. And just, it was unobtrusive. It was an invisible experience. And of course, you know, through, you know, different plugins in the browser architecture, it makes for a more invisible experience. You don't necessarily have, you don't launch the UI, but you see the actual content right there. And I'm just curious. I mean, I know
one of the things that has happened over time, and it happens to every company, is there comes a point at which they have to make money.
And I understand.
And Real Audio 2.0 was, you know, you're talking about it as the glory days. It was not a glory day for an owner of the company because the company was losing money, right? And so...
We're being invaded by outer space at this point.
I guess so, yes. We got some pretty nasty feedback from next door here. Okay, so...
You needed to make money.
Yeah. So,
and by the way, for whatever it's worth, the show is sponsored, I'm not kidding, by Microsoft Windows Media. But go ahead, continue.
Oh my.
This is great. So we can disavow them all we want. Just kidding.
Hey, it's an open conversation. Anything goes.
So there's, you know, when you're making a cross-platform media player, and you're not hawking an operating system agenda, there has to be some way that you keep the lights on. And there was a period of time where advertising was a pretty big component of that.
But the tactics that were used is what keeps geeks like myself from being able to recommend it wholeheartedly. That's the issue that I had. When I installed the player, I knew that I had to scroll down to remove more check marks that weren't removed because half of them were off and half of them were on. And then going through it again, I had to make sure I checked off certain things but not other things. And that experience, to me, damaged the Real brand. As much money as you're able to make from subscriptions by making people believe the only way to use the player is to pay for it, I know that the best way to go and get a Real player is to go to the BBC and get it from them.
Right, but... You know, I think you have to look at our current actions today, and especially
I'm trying to.
As we were saying before, like a lot of the things you brought up are things that were old versions of the software, and things that have been fixed already. So, looking at the new versions of the software, they're a lot better. Additionally, the great thing about the Helix community is you've got the source code there. If you want to build your own version of the player, that's exactly the way that you want it.
But I'm not a programmer. I count on you. I count on programmers, the people in general, the community at large, to do this. Because I can only say, hey, here's an idea. Can someone make it?
Uh-huh.
And that's where I...
Well, you can certainly rally the troops, right? I mean, at the end of the day, somebody's got to pay the bills. Somebody's got to make it happen.
And, I agree.
And, you know... To the extent that there are, if you look at the three major media players out there, we're the only one that's made by a company that's not hawking an operating system agenda.
That's very valid. That's very valid.
And as a result of that, we don't have the revenue base associated with selling an operating system or selling hardware or all of that other.
I totally agree, and for whatever it's worth, I think the Windows Media Player on OS X is far better than the one on Windows itself, in my opinion. I'm not looking for because, like I said, we know every company has got a jukebox. In fact, a jukebox solution. I was in the press room, and someone handed me yet another jukebox solution. I'm like, great. I've seen this before. It does something just a little differently. Your icons are pink. What's the key differentiation? I will say this right now. I'll install 10.5. I'll take a look.
Great.
What am I going to find in 10.5 that is not only going to change my mind and get me over that hump that really left a sour taste in not only my mouth, but the mouths of geeks the world over? What am I going to find in 10.5 that I'm not going to find in other media players on the planet?
When I first interviewed at Real Networks a few years back, this was one of the things that I actually brought up in the interview. I actually said, as a matter of fact, I don't use the Real Player anymore because I used to use it every time. And in fact, I ran a website with like Indian music on it in real format, right? And I used to respect the company a lot in those days because any technical support questions I sent in, I always used to get back feedback from engineers in real, like in real time. So I said, when this happened, when I saw that there were these three boxes that were checked under the, under the scroll bar, I figured, it's about time I stopped using this. So I didn't use it. I said, this is what's happening. And, I got a similar reaction. It's like, well, this, every time, it's like there is a thing like being in the right place at the right time and also being in the wrong place at the wrong time, right? So if you become very, very popular, right? I mean, if you were little Winamp or, you're not very popular, you're just a small upstart, and you make a mistake, a lot of times it goes unnoticed. People are like, it's fine. But if you have become like the de facto big thing and you make a small mistake even, that thing haunts you for a long, long time, right? I mean, it haunts you to a point where unless you do a super huge PR blitz back, there's very, it's really hard to convince people that, hey, it was only a small mistake. It's kind of like the Chinese whispering story or something, where you tell one thing to one guy and then that guy tells something else to another guy. And by the end, it's like some really totally different thing, right? So I've heard wild things. I've heard things like, Real runs a server on your thing and, they farm out things to China.
And by the way, I remember I installed the Real Producer and that was actually a fantastic application. Are you still developing that?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Is it still?
It's a product, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. I remember using it and I had absolutely no problem with it because, like yourself, when we had the Chris Perlow show running on terrestrial radio when we were in Iowa, mm-hmm. we initially were uploading in the Real format because it was smaller than MP3 and offered virtually the same, amount of quality.
Right.
But I had to stray from that, not necessarily because I wanted to, but because the community was demanding it of me.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like I said, when you use, if you go try 10.5.
Which I will do.
Right.
I swear right now, Jake won't edit that out.
Right, and we believe that it's definitely our best effort thus far towards creating a good media player for the Windows consumer.
Do you guys have we've got a question from the audience. Do you mind taking a question?
Sure.
All right.
So, podcasting, is this your first experience with podcasting, Vikram?
Not really. I mean, I know this guy for too long now.
Yeah, but we hadn't had you on the show until now.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I've had conversations about podcasting with both Robert Scoble, who works for Microsoft, and with Dave Weiner. I'm familiar with podcasting, but in terms of actually doing it live, I suppose this is
a little different.
Yeah.
What does Real have any plans in terms of the podcasting space? Given that its nature is open source ish,
yeah. I mean, being in the consumer products group, this is obviously a buzzword that's going around in technology circles right now.
You'd rather call it real casting, right?
Actually, it's fine. I mean, whatever the users know it as is what we would go with, right? Like I said, Real Networks is a lot about empowering the user more than anything else. And that's why, Real Player does universal media playback. It plays Windows media too.
The Real Player does?
Yeah.
Real Player for Windows.
Now, it doesn't play DRM content?
No, I think it does DRM content too.
You're able to get past that then?
Well, the way that it's working on Real Player for Windows is we leverage the underlying Windows Media Framework to play back that content.
So you're not doing anything wonky.
Well, yeah, on Windows, you know, actually Microsoft offers, you know, DRM SDKs and such so that you can actually hook into the Windows. Like, the problem with Linux, for instance, is that Microsoft just tries to ignore Linux or be like, you know, we don't want to give you anything good sort of thing, right? So if, for instance, as a program product manager for the Linux Real Player, I would say this, is if Microsoft were to offer a good solution on Linux for Windows Media Playback, I have no problems enabling that in Real Player so that the users can, you know, use it for Windows Media too.
So you're kind of offering this to Microsoft in general. At this point, I mean, I'm sure you've done it in the past.
Oh, we have tried. I mean, have you tried? I mean, you should try sometime going on Microsoft website and trying to get more information about Windows Media and non-Windows platforms.
What are you looking for specifically? Are you looking for a person to speak with?
I mean, it would be great to understand what they're... I mean, it would be wonderful to understand their position on doing a popularly, widely available SDK for Windows Media on Linux. On Linux desktops.
But if they're trying to ignore Linux, or your belief that they're trying to ignore Linux.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't want to put words in their mouth, obviously,
no,
because
but that's your
I have
perception.
Great friends in Microsoft.
No, as do I. And it's much like with Real, and what I hesitate in recommending the player and why I do is because of my experience and my perception of the way it treated me as a user and how I saw other people reacting to it as well.
Right. Well, with Microsoft, all I'm saying is it might be that it's not their business priority at this point. They don't see Linux as being big or significant or important to them. And there is only this much that I can do, right? I care about Windows Media in the Real Player because, you know, users care about it, you know, because there is some content that's only in Windows Media. But there is only this much that any community, any project can go towards trying to make something happen.
Yeah.
You know, and after that, what I say is, look, if you're a content provider and you really, really care about reaching this important audience of the Linux audience, then, you know, go and find a cross-platform solution. You know, use Real Audio, Real Video because it's cross-platform. If not, use something else that's cross-platform and, you know, we probably support it. AAC, you know, is a standard and it's cross-platform. Use that.
I was lucky enough to find out that Linspire actually supports Windows Media now, too. I mean, the operating system. Not perfectly, not 100%. It won't support DRM content, for instance.
Yeah, I mean, if you talk to any of the technical... I mean, I work closely with the Linspire folks. And if you ask any of the technical people at Linspire, and actually even the marketing people, they're all very smart, they will tell you what a horrible time they have been having to try to get the Windows Media thing to work right. Hmm. Right? I mean, it's not a prerogative for Microsoft right now. So, I mean, it's... I have not seen the Linux SDK or the Linux code that Microsoft provided for Windows Media. But, you know...
Maybe this is another part, another time where I get to rattle my cage and kind of rally the troops. Right, Rob?
Mm-hmm.
Is this my time? I wanted to come back to something that you had brought up in terms of the company wasn't making money with something simplistic and you needed to move mm-hmm. towards a different model, that being services or subscriptions.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the business model in Helix?
So the business model in Helix right now, if you look at where our revenues come from these days, it's well over 80% of our revenues are based on consumer services revenues. So things like Rhapsody and Superpass and a lot of premium content services. And so because of that, that's really shifted the priorities of our software development organization in general. It used to be that systems software sales were almost our exclusive source of revenue. So we've come a long ways from those days. As a result of that, of having such a large amount of our revenue coming from the services side of things, the advertising piece has become less of a priority as well. So certainly we're in a position today that from a business perspective, We're in a lot better place than, say, we were, you know, at any time in our past for making a really for being aligned with the community in terms of creating a player that everybody can like.
I have a fundamental understanding in that your model, you have to chase whatever is going to be the path of least resistance. You have to go down that path. Mm-hmm. So at one time, advertising was big. It was everybody was doing it. There was an opportunity there that, you know, you took advantage of in a certain way. Mm-hmm. In much the same way, I'm a content provider, and my model used to be with email newsletters, you know, where I send out information a certain way. And recently, I mean, literally within the past year, I had to make some switches as well because advertising has started to work differently than the way it used to work. So I completely, so I'm not like busting your chops or trying to put your feet to the fire, but it's questions that I ask because of the mind share. If I bring up Reel as a format, people automatically associate that with the player. So is there any effort or any possible effort that's going to be made to get people over that hump, to let them know that, because we were talking about the 10.5 player. Jake said, yeah, it's a fantastic player. He says arguably one of the better media players, at least for the Windows platform. But I still had that problem getting over that hump. Is there any type of marketing that is moving forward to try to get people to realize that Reel has kind of changed its tune, if you'll pardon the expression?
Sure. Part of the reason why we're here is to, you know, get the word out and let people know some of the things that we're doing today that, you know, may be the same as yesterday, may be different than yesterday, but regardless, we're always tooting our own horn.
You're a sponsor here. You got a booth. No problem.
There was an interview that Rob Glazer did on Slashdot about 6 months ago that really good dialogue with the community, where, you know, the Slashdot typical style of ask a bunch of questions, and they, you know, a lot of very hard questions, and I think a lot of people came away from that very impressed with the thinking and, you know, where we're at today and willing to give us another chance. So I think we're getting the word out there. Sometimes it's going to be hard, but
in the Helix community, how many, in terms of percentage, how many are Linux versus OS X versus Windows?
We don't really have good stats on that. Clearly, the focus, as I was saying before, the Helix player has kind of been our flagship application, and that's a Linux application. It's a it's not explicitly designed to be 100% Linux, so compiling that on OS X or Win32 is for skilled developers probably not that tough.
Right. And being cross-platform helps in that, you know, we have cross-platform codecs, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're running on Mac, PowerPC platform, you can still, you know, get a player that actually works.
Well, I use Reel Alternative, which I'm sure is not exactly the easy. I could install my own codecs, but fortunately the player does it for me. And so I use Media Player Classic vicariously. That's my default media player because it's simple, it works, it loads quick, and it literally plays any kind of media that I run into at any point in time. If it is as simple as you say to take the code and compile it, let's say for Win32, why hasn't anybody done it?
I don't know. It's
what does it take? Let me ask you.
Part of the question is, you know, do we have to go after the folks that are illegally using our codecs and get them to take them off the market so there's no not the competition there? I don't know.
What do I need to compile? If someone steps me through it, I will go out and I will purchase what I need to purchase to compile the Helix player for the Windows platform. Is it going to take for me to do this?
I think you're doing a fabulous job. I mean,
I'm serious, Vic. I want to compile the player for Win32.
I think go to player.helixcommunity.org and
what do I do? Okay, so I'm not a programmer. So which compiler do I need? Like a C++ compiler?
There are two types of compilers. I believe we've got it actually working on GCC for Windows. I'm not positive about that. But certainly Visual C++.
Fantastic. Consider it done. All right. Okay. I will... This is my first leap into the world of programming, but I there needs to be something for Win32. Windows.
Here's the thing. I'll also explain it from the point of view of Media Player Classic. I mean, I've used Media Player Classic as my MP3 player for a long time now. You and I, for instance, are the kind of people who are, you know, we are very focused on all kinds of cool technology. You know, we like new applications. We like trying out new software, you know. So for us, there are certain basic needs that we want met, and Media Player Classic meets those needs really well. And so that's great, right? So in terms of why is there no application from Real that is doing this, that's doing the job that Media Player Classic is doing, maybe it is because Media Player Classic is already doing it for the few people that need this, right?
I will go as far as to say that when I do this, I'm going to do it. When I do this, I guarantee I'll get traffic. I guarantee I'll get eyeballs.
No
doubt.
Because
people are looking for it. People are looking for something simplistic. People are looking to be able to play real content without necessarily having to load an application. I'm not looking for an application. I'm looking for an applet. I'm looking for something simple. And when the word gets out, I mean, it's like how I know about the BBCs, because people tell me that, well, if you want a real player that doesn't come with a lot of stuff that you may not want, go here. Go to this web page, and you won't necessarily get bombarded with things that you wouldn't necessarily need.
Yeah, I mean, we are obviously talking awfully lot about the Windows platform.
I apologize.
Given we are in a Linux show. But, it's like,
well, this is probably being streamed to more Windows machines than Linux machines at this point.
Sure. I mean, so the thing, though, is that if this was a Linux request, this is one thing that Windows users and the Windows community needs to understand why Linux, you know, is such a community effort, right? If this was Linux and you were on Linux and you're saying, I don't have this application on Linux, or I don't have an application that meets these needs on Linux, you are a lot more empowered on Linux today. You know, it's like the community is in place, the processes are in place. The general mindset is geared towards, hey, if you don't have an application that meets your needs with these features, you have all the things that are in place to go do it right now.
But if you're someone like me, who is, I'm not a programmer. The last thing I touched was like BASIC, like years ago.
Right.
So I'm not anywhere near adept at what it would take to put things together. I adore the power that is the community of Linux.
Right.
That being said, I look in awe, and that's about it.
Right. So there is probably a Chris Pirillo, the programmer, somewhere else, who also has the same need and who is also looking for this kind of thing. And once enough critical mass comes together, Chris Pirillo, the you know, normal guy who doesn't, you know, have the special skill sets and everything, is also going to be a contributor by way of, you know, being evangelist, by way of being the person that brings more people together, by way of being a user and testing and, you know, filing bugs and stuff. So maybe what we are talking about right now is the first galvanizing movement for starting an open source Windows effort in multimedia.
Does one exist? And you'd probably know.
I mean, the platform exists, right?
Mm-hmm.
All
sure.
the raw material, all the CVS code, all the stuff that you need exists on Helix Community. If you go on Helix Community today, you might not find a very nicely written tutorial that says, okay, if you are Chris Pirillo, follow these steps to, you know.
Why? Come on, what have you guys been doing?
Well, think about it. It's like... It's a small group of people that have gotten together and said, okay, Linux doesn't have a really awesome multimedia experience, so let's focus on that first. And that's what's happening right now, right? So if you care a lot about this, then, you know, start the ball rolling.
See,
right?
Now, that's really what surprises me, because, as you said, you know, Linux really doesn't have this media center. It would make more sense to me that a 10.5 type application that's currently running on Windows – would play so much better on Linux because there is no alternative.
It's, I mean, as a need on Linux over time, yes, it's very critical that such an application come by, right? I mean, that's what Linspire is trying to do in some ways, is they are trying to create some applications that kind of meet this need, right? And I have no doubt that over time, you know, be it the Helix player, the Real player, or some other player working with the Helix player and Real player will meet this need in probably just as good or even better than how it is on Windows and Mac. It's a question of, you know, the momentum being gained. You know, you look at OpenOffice and you look at Firefox, right? Firefox, the project started almost, I mean, the Mozilla project started almost 5 or 6 years back, right? The first 4 years, they generally struggled. I mean, it was all internal people or, you know, people who are really, really close to their project, just chugging along, chugging along, chugging along. And then suddenly, boom, in like 1 year, there's been more work done in that project than the previous 5 years. So there is always a hump that, you know, is breached at some point. And then, you know, it becomes very, very popular. So hopefully, by looking at how Firefox has done it, by looking at how OpenOffice has done it, we can reach that hump sooner. And, you know, with more awareness in the Windows world, among people who usually would have considered the Linux to be this alien thing, you know, that, you know, you didn't worry about. If you're taking an active interest right now, and that's actually a very positive thing, right? Because for better or worse, you're going to be a little bit more informed about this. And tomorrow you're going to inform somebody else about this, right? Who knows, you might have an influential, you know, CIO of some company that listens to you and says, hey, we always wanted a Windows slim down media player. And Chris tells me that Helix community has all the ingredients that I need to get this built.
And this is free.
Yeah.
Or open source. You can't really call it free.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's open source, and, you know, depending on the usage, according to the open source tenets, you know, it's dual license or tri-license. You know, if you want to use it for commercial purposes internally, you can get it under one license and so forth, right? And then you can explain to that person that, hey, you know, this is open source, this is available, and then that's how a lot of open source projects are supported by companies, you know, a lot of IT departments who use this as a community effort. Right, so that's another way to get some momentum going.
Now, are there any other things that the Helix community is working on beyond, let's say, just the player or any type of producing efforts, any type of at the server level efforts?
Well, I think the other I never really got into the other half of this, which was the other big area of activity is in the embedded space in. Basically taking the Helix framework and making it work on portable phones and that sort of thing. And we're seeing a really encouraging upswell of particularly cellular phone handset manufacturers that are really taking Helix and getting it deep into the infrastructure there. And so once again, it's the cross-platform nature of Helix that has been the big advantage that we've been able to bring to the table. It works great on the Symbian platform, which is a very common platform in smartphone development. And additionally, embedded Linux and VXWorks. There's a lot of it's been ported to a lot of different operating system platforms there, and so that's one of the big areas where there's been a lot of work going on in Helix. On the server side, we've the engineers plug away on the server pieces. Much of the source code for the server is shared with the client, and is developed in Helix community.org.
It's open source too.
Yes.
So wait, how are they getting paid? Or okay, so the Helix community, obviously, they're either independent or they work for somebody else. So that
well, basically, all our developers, the folks that are on our paid staff, instead of checking it into some internal CVS repository, they're checking it into a CVS repository on HelixCommunity.org. The bulk of the developers on HelixCommunity.org are developers from Real Networks.
Have you thought about extending the Helix? The idea of the Helix project is that a fair term to use?
Mm-hmm.
Just an umbrella term into just cross-platform media in general, not specifically just real stuff. So bringing over the stuff that's on SourceForge right now is just kind of all over the map. I mean, you've got a certain amount of a dichotomy in the way things get put and where they get put. But in terms of opening up, you know, what Helix is, making it in just general media.
Well, the reason why the why it's catching on handsets, it's not because of not necessarily because of real audio and real video, although certainly having a real audio, real video capable media engine is a big plus. But it's also 3GPP compliant, which is a big deal for wireless carriers. And so the messaging around Helix has always been about universal playback. And so we've got an architecture that supports universal delivery of media. To the extent that there are some pieces that need licensing that we haven't been able to license, there's going to be limitations there, obviously. But from an architectural perspective, it has always been about any platform, any format, any processor, anywhere. So
to answer your question, it is about multimedia.
Okay. Yeah. So do you have an app or is someone developing an app or can, I'm sure someone can, develop something that would allow me to easily, just with a piece of software sitting on my home computer, just stream out media that I could, say, pick up on my pocket PC, which I have, like, an unlimited, it's a Samsung i700. I'm on Verizon. I've got, you know, all you can eat plan for $44 a month. Is it something that I could use to turn this into my media player? Just a portable, without necessarily having to carry around a Creative Zen USB 2.0 and remember to bring that with me if I have it with me all the time.
So the Helix Producer is the framework that we use as part of our commercial products for mobile encoding products. Now, the mobile encoding products that we make, we sell, but the underlying infrastructure, the source code, is there available for others to use. But the Helix community is not geared towards end users. And so to answer your question, it's not going to be something that without being a developer that you can just go and download a snarf and that's not our goal, because our goal with Helix community is to attract a development community around the platform. It's not necessarily to make a whole bunch of free stuff for everybody and not have a business.
Sure. I understand.
There's a few different ways in which your need can be accomplished, right? One is you can buy the enterprise level producer. Right, that's going to be kind of expensive for you to buy.
What is it, about $50,000 or more?
I'm not sure, but you know, some big number,
sure.
Bigger number than what average home user would want to pay, right? Or if you're a developer, you have the development chops or whatnot, or you know a developer friend that will do this for you for some reason, you can go and get that done, right? If not, go to an existing project, right? Like, see, is there a consumer-focused project there? Yes, there is one, which is the player project, right? And go and see, because there are a lot of fellow consumers on this project, go and seed that project with your idea. Say, hey, I'm sure there are other people here who want this to happen, right? So does it make sense to make this a feature of the player, or does it make sense to actually have this other project which will create an application? So essentially what you're doing is, while you might not be a developer, you're using your convincing capabilities to rally support around this, right?
Well, yeah, it would be something. I'd imagine it's just like a playlist that you're essentially pushing out to a specific device, being I would only want to pull it in, only share the URL with myself, because obviously I don't want to saturate my personal home machine everybody who wants to listen.
You're looking for a good user interface to the producer, right?
Wait.
I mean, like, we have a command line producer that's available, but you want an application that lets you do this.
Oh, yeah.
Now, so either you can develop it, you can encourage the community to develop it, or there's another cool thing that you could do is you could find a company that does things like that, and you can encourage them to say, hey, look, there is this open source technology that is available. And, you know, if you guys make a shareware application or some application out of this technology, I am willing to pay, you know, $10 or $15 or $20 to do this. And they that's their livelihood, right? So they say, okay, hey, you know, adding this feature to our thing is good. So, you know, they can go and...
I think I have a possible developer in mind, although I'm not sure if he would do it. I'm thinking of someone now. I'm thinking audio streaming, and there's a guy out there who would probably know how this could very easily be done.
There's a lot of potential in the technology that is available on Helix Community for small-scale developers to go and build businesses around. I mean, I don't think, given the small teams that we have in Real right now, I don't think we have done enough evangelism around, you know, building lots of, you know, little businesses.
Cool things. You know, I look at things like SourceForge and what it's done. I mean, I'll look and see, hey, wow, this is a really cool application. I can't wait to see, you know, further development. You know, everyone was talking about BitTorrent, yeah. And they still are. And I tried a couple of applications, and it was kind of like, yeah. Oh, God, what? No. And, of course, you have the opposite end of the spectrum, like with the Kazaa Media Desktop just completely throwing the user into just endless amounts of spyware. Yep. But then along came, and you'll, I don't know if this is how you pronounce it, Azurius, open source project, right. Azurius.sf.net. Mm-hmm. It is a BitTorrent client that works, yep. It's clean. It's written in Java, yet it looks just like a Windows application.
Yeah.
So it's seamless. It doesn't stand out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, and it's an open source project. I mean, the thing is, this is it. Somewhere, somehow, either you hit a person who can lead the development effort, or you know, you hit a person who can actually help lead the development effort, and then it happens, right? I mean, it's always kind of a critical mass thing. And it brings me back to the original question you asked me, and we kind of got sidetracked about podcasting, right? Yeah, I mean, we think about that as a feature, as a future feature all the time.
Like of the producer, to be able to enable, you know, right now Jake and I are just running Adobe Audition to record this, and it's so, thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yes, didn't realize it was that big a deal. But, you know, we're just using this application, but then we have to do some, if you will, tweaking to get it to work the way we need it to work to do what we need it to do.
Right.
So it would be fantastic if anybody's listening
to
be able to take what you've got, the underpinnings of the Helix producer, and to make a podcasting application.
Well, a good example of this is a company that was started a couple ex Real Networks employees, as a matter of fact, did exactly this. Took a bunch of the Helix producer and Helix server code, and created a product that is a piece of hardware. It's based on the Shuttle hardware that has a built-in encoder and server, and called Webcast in a Box, and it is. It is just a box with, you know, analogs, audio inputs, and video inputs, and so on, and out
and
the other
and an Ethernet out, right?
And an Ethernet out,
yep.
And a big old hard drive in between.
And it produces content, just streams it, or does it save it automatically in, let's say, for argument's sake, any type of audio format that I may have installed the codec on my system for?
Well, it installs it in. It works in Real Audio, Real Video. I don't remember what other formats it supports.
I'd imagine like MP3 or something.
It probably supports most of the formats that the server can support, which is a lot of them.
Right. I imagine, but regardless, it both streams it and saves it. So and then there's a CD burner built into it, and if you want to just burn something to CD after you're done, you know, you throw a CD in there and burn it to CD, and you're done. It's a great little application. It's ideal for this type of. Ideal for this type of a setup.
It's closer to that. But as with any vertical market, and I would consider podcasting relatively vertical. I mean, it's new, but there are specific needs that podcasting has.
Yep.
It's not necessarily, and I hesitate to call the Chris Perillo Show a podcast, even though it is in the sense that we have RSS 2.0 feeds with enclosures, but we also use the Windows Media format, which isn't a traditional podcast format. We use Windows Media Video format, which isn't a traditional podcast because podcast centers on audio, and we're also sponsored. So all the things that come along with it, though, right now what we have to do is we have to use this tool on top of this tool on top of this tool. Is the Helix community, if they're more working for somebody else than for themselves, how are they going to be able to grasp this concept? And Vic, you kind of spoke to that, you know, finding someone to become that developer for you, but that seems to be like tilting at windmills.
Well, you know, the whole idea about casting something, you know, like any casting, this is what I call it, any casting. You can probably broadcast almost anything, right? there is always going to be some need. And until the market gets to a point where there is significant enough need that somebody sees a business opportunity or sees some sort of an opportunity where they can invest a certain amount of resources to get something to happen, it's not going to happen. I mean, it's as clear as that. And, you know, can we add podcasting to the next version of the Real Player? Right? That's one easy way to make it to happen, right? Some podcasting support, right?
Right.
But the question is, it's the same way. It's like, if there is enough momentum in the community and a lot of feature requests have come in.
Well, dude, look at Jake was quoted for me saying something about podcasting in yesterday's USA Today. Luckily, it was he was the producer of the Chris Perlow show, so my name got in there as well.
Yeah, but
not enough momentum?
You have to realize that there have been lots of buzzwords that have been thrown around in the past that have lasted about 15 days in media frenzy. You know, everybody from Wall Street Journal to, you know, USA Today, everybody picked them up for those 15 days. And then 15 days later, they were not heard again. So, I mean...
But blogging works differently. I really believe it does, and the nature of conversation is that it evolves.
Well, yeah, it's. I am not. I maintain a blog too. So I mean, it's not against blogging or against podcasting that I'm saying this. I'm saying when a business needs to make a decision whether they want to invest, because every time it's an investment. You know, how many developers do I have? How many features do users want? And I need to decide. You know, which features need to go.
But how many features do users not realize that they want? Which would make their lives easier to be able to synchronize content. You've got a developer, Nick Bradbury, created HomeSite, which was then sold off, and now he's got TopStyle, and then FeedDemon. He released FeedDemon 1.5 that has inherent support to synchronize subscriptions, not only to iTunes, but he, in my opinion, has probably made one of the first applications that makes it easy to synchronize your favorite podcasts or audio subscriptions to a Windows Media Playlist.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying there isn't cool software that came out of somebody who thought, I know that I can create a market here. Right, I know what the users want. I'm not doubting that at all. And you know, that's the dream of most entrepreneurs too. But at the same time, there's enough number of times when designers think that they know what the community or the user base wants, and then spends a large amount of time on features that nobody uses too. So I mean, there's always a balance you need to use. And so I'm not saying either way whether podcasting support or blogging related stuff is going to be in our future versions of Real Player or
the producer,
Rhapsody,
right,
or Produce or any of these, because you know I don't think those decisions have been made.
But it's on your radar.
Yeah, it's definitely. These are the kind of things that, you know, product managers, program managers, everybody will have to be aware of and will have to be cognizant of.
All right, fair enough. I think I've probably sucked up enough of your time here, so I can let you go back to your booth. Do you have booth babes?
We are the booth babes.
Oh, boy.
Now we have fabulous booth babes.
Well, not if you're the booth babes. Thanks again, Vic, and thank you, Rob.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Listen to The Chris Perlow Show live every Thursday at 7 p.m. Pacific.